This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go to the Rood guest hotline. Rood, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV, because Barry Sferluga of the Washington Post is waiting for us. And we wanted to talk to him about his exclusive conversation with Mark Lerner that he wrote about in the Post. So, Barry, thanks for a few minutes. So let's just start with kind of how long the conversation was and what kind of ground you got to cover.
I mean, I'm not going to tell you it was a, 60 minute long, winding, everything covered interview, because it wasn't. There's, a lot of negotiation just to get him to agree to talk, which he really hadn't done publicly, except for brief remarks to our Andrew Golden from the Post last year, saying they were taking the team off the market. And even when I broke the story in April 2022 that they were going to put the team on the market, those exchanges were by email. He didn't answer questions verbally. He really has not faced questions from a reporter in years, literally. So he did agree to do this. We had a pleasant chat. It was 10, 12 minutes long. And then, we chatted about other stuff going on in D.C., whatever, that doesn't matter to this conversation. But he's a pleasant person. He's always been a very nice man. That family has spent the entirety of their now 19 years in a very public position, owning a company that people care about in ways that they don't care about a mall or an office building, not really being very forward facing people. That's just their nature. But I think it was important to at least have him say, here's why we changed our thinking on selling the team, and here's what we envision going forward, even if those answers don't, provide 100% clarity that a lot of people would like.
So, Barry, that's one of the two huge takeaway conversation pieces I want to have with you. But let's do the first one first that you just referenced. We just wanted to see what was out there. I thought that was an amazing quote that he had. I don't have the exact wording in front of me, but when the team was for sale, bids were coming in, and then they went off the market, it was he just wanted to see what was out there. I don't know that that's how just want to see what was out there looks to me. But anyway, your thoughts on that?
The translation there is, we didn't get our price.
Yeah.
And that's just, it's as simple as that. And he's not going to say that, and he doesn't have to say that. But if they were going to be blown out of the water by an offer, they would have accepted that offer. I'll go to my grave believing that. I think they still have a price in mind. If somebody came in tomorrow and offered them that price plus $1, I think the team would be back on the market. That's just not the way things unfolded. And they did say at the beginning of the process that, look, this doesn't mean we're going to completely sell the team 100%. Maybe we could find people who would inject some cash in but not have any influence, more minority partners. You could try to do that. I've never understood the reasons other than ego. Somebody would want to be a minority partner in a sports team because you have the right to put in money that and have no decision-making power. That doesn't sound like a lot of fun to me. So maybe they were looking for that kind of thing. Sure, that's fine. But that didn't happen. None of that happened. And here we are with, another reason to get him to try to talk or try to get him to talk is, you go through this kind of public, not fiasco, but public process and end up in the same place that you started off. It's fair to wonder, well, if you weren't 100% in to the point where you were going to sell or sell off pieces or whatever, it's fair to question, are you 100% in now that you've gotten to the other side of this? And there's been, frankly, more losing than any team in baseball in the last 5 years, and flagging attendance and flagging enthusiasm about the team from the fan base.
And the inability to spend real money, which I want to get into. Barry Svrluga of the Washington Post is with us on Grant and Danny. So I know you asked that question. I want to give you some insight, give us some insight on that. What is the explanation for an offseason where, people will point out, well, here's X amount of millions of dollars they spent. No, Corbin came off the books, and they basically dollar for dollar replaced that with a couple million extra dollars maybe added to payroll. They essentially did not add after a year of Cruz graduating and Wood graduating and being closer and theoretically turning the corner in the rebuild. They had an offseason where they could have gone out and been aggressive, and they were the opposite of that. What is the explanation for that?
It's not one that's particularly satisfying on a couple levels, I would say. One, when I asked that, you've spent on payroll, you've spent on big contracts in the past, Max Scherzer, $210 million, Jason Worth, $126 million, Patrick Corbin, $160 million, extensions for Strasburg and Zimmerman, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Would you do that in the future? And he said, if Mike Rizzo and the baseball operations department came to us and said, we think that this would be a good move, we would talk about it. That is not, we would do it. So I put in this piece that these words are going to be parsed, and they're going to be parsed because there are so few of them from him, not just in this piece, because there's plenty in the piece, but so few of them over time, year over year. You just don't have a lot of glimpses into their thinking. I mean, I was thinking about this in particular. I was working on trying to get Mark Lerner as I was sitting down in Ashburn for Josh Harris's season-ending press conference. Ted Leonsis does nothing but, get on the airwaves and talk about his teams. So it's a very, very, very different approach. So back to the contracts, he said, we would listen, we would talk about whether it was the right thing for a big contract, a Worth type contract. That's different than saying we would do it. And then secondly, he alluded to the Jason Worth contract, which was the first big free agent signing in 2011. Your good buddy, Jason Worth. I know you guys like to hang out together.
We're pals now.
That's a great zing, Barry.
We're pals now.
He said, the timing was perfect there. He's the guy that got us over the hump. Well, if you look at it, this is exactly the time when they signed Worth. It's an analogous time. It's not a year from now. They signed him coming off of a couple of 100 loss seasons, and then they went 80 and 81 and then won the division in 2012. This was the time, and they did not do that. And I don't have a better answer as to why. And, it's a kind of revelatory about the interview. It wasn't one of those ones where I felt like I had infinite time to follow up and drill down and grill and all that kind of stuff. It was going to be bing, 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 get in and get out. And so I don't have a really satisfying answer as to why did that not happen this season, because this season is analogous to the Worth season signing.
Barry Svaluga with us here on GND, and it sounds like I'm shooting the messenger here, Barry. You're delivering it, and your point is, of course, correct. It's the big disconnect. That's why so many fans, myself included, are just pulling their hair out and screaming. You look at the parallels. This team is better than that team. The team that just finished playing in 2024, more war, one positive war in that 2010 pitching staff. Levon Hernandez is 110 years old. Half the team's offensive war was Ryan Zimmerman. You look at this group now, more everywhere, more young players, a better core. This was the time. Do you really think that this was a baseball decision or something else? And if it's something else, obviously part of a much larger conversation.
Well, I mean, I think it's not a baseball decision. And that's not to say, Danny, that, okay, so you take Soto out of the equation because they weren't going to spend $765 million. And I think you can defend that, even though I'm an enormous, you know, Juan Soto, for Juan Soto. But I think you can pick apart, like, why did Pete Alonso not get more than 2 years from the Mets? Like, Alex Bregman, it took a long time to get the deal he got from Boston. Like, if you go around and look at the offensive free agents, you can pick holes and say those weren't the guys that are going to be difference makers for us in 6 or 7 years. I know that they wanted to go after Christian Walker, and they were prevented from doing that. You can also argue, is he really a game changer as an aging first baseman? Excellent defensively, can hit for power, but maybe you could argue that Nathaniel Lowe is a okay version of what you would have gotten out of an aging Christian Walker. So you can parse the baseball stuff, but I think the answer to your question is, if there had been somebody on the market that Mike Rizzo and his staff said, this is the one, my sense is the answer would have been, we're not doing it now. And again, we did not address this very specific thing in our interview, but my strong sense from around the organization is what I would consider to be a little bit backwards thinking, that we need more people to buy tickets so that we have revenue coming in to pay players, I think is backwards from we need to pay players so that people have reason to buy tickets. That's how I would phrase it. And then, you know, further complicating all of this is, of course, Masson, the 20-year shadow over the entire operation. They're not getting the money from the Orioles right now for the latest 5-year installment of Masson TV rights. That's a legitimate hindrance. Like, if they don't get that money, that's $320 million from 2022 to 26 that they could turn into, you know, mid-level free agents or whatever they wanted to turn it into. I would give them the right to say, and they can't, Mark couldn't talk about this because it is in the courts, but like, that is pretty legitimate that they're getting right now zero in that revenue stream when they should be getting, you know, an average of about, I guess it would be $60 or $70 million a year.
That's well said. Barry Svaluga is with us on GND. So I guess I have a two-parter. One of them is just a reaction to what you were just saying, or at least a rebuttal, and I'm kind of arguing with someone who's not here who you're explaining the thoughts of. But you would think that they would get the if you build it, they will come thing, right? Like, in that they've had 6 years where their attendance was well over 30,000 a game, and they were the 2013 to 2019 years. It was when the team was good at baseball. And I don't think it's like that much of a, you know, a science experiment to figure out that when you're winning 94 games, more people are coming to your ballpark. So I guess that's thought number one. But then the second thing is, I went into this offseason thinking, if they don't spend a little bit, I'm going to assume that this group's not going to spend again. And they didn't. And that's kind of now my assumption. Am I wrong for thinking that way?
I think you're not wrong. I think we don't know. And I think I would say just a couple things. One about attendance. Like, if you look at attendance highs are generally not the year in which the team is successful. It's the following year because you get excitement about, hey, we just won the division title, and I'm thinking about a partial season ticket plan, and maybe my buddies and I will go in on one, and I'll do 20 games a year, whatever it is. So that's why 2013, which it was a disappointing year, that was the World Series or bust, Davey Johnson's second year, you know, it didn't work out. They did not win the division title coming off the 2012 season when they broke through and Bryce was a rookie and all of that stuff.
Still their highest attended per game rate ever was that 2013 season.
2005. The inaugural season.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, that's true. But Nats Park is what I'm talking about. But that's
correct,
true.
Correct. For sure. So you're right about that. Like, they should draw some lessons from attendances in the past. I also would say the unknowable here, and again, showing the limitations of my conversation with Mark, and I'm not sure whether he would even address this, but all of that stuff is pre-COVID, and all of that stuff is pre-COVID really laid waste to a lot of commercial real estate companies and really had a huge impact on businesses that have a large stake in like office buildings and things like that. And that is Lerner Enterprises. Now they're diversified. I don't profess to be an expert on their business, but the question is a long-winded way of saying, like, did the impact of the pandemic have such a profound impact on your business that is in turn having an impact on how you run your side business, which is the Nationals? Steve Cohen in New York, it's a bad example because you don't expect, you know, we don't have to expect the Lerners to spend $370 million on payroll. But he is very clear that, look, I made all my money in this hedge fund stuff. That is my primary business. This is my side business. I can spend money, my own personal money, on this business, on the baseball team, because I want to, and I want to be kind of a hero to Mets fans. That's a very different take than the Lerners have on their team. And I just always wonder what's the relationship between the core business that the Lerner family, you know, grew up with, that Ted Lerner made them billionaires, and their running of the baseball team.
Barry, let me sneak one in super quick. We're up against it, but I want to know this one. If they were in the bidding for certain guys, then they said, you know what, that's probably too rich for our blood to overpay for Anthony Santander or, you know, name that player, I think I'd feel a lot better about it. The fact that they weren't linked to anybody, I think, is the part that I find most distressing. Your reaction?
Yeah, I think that's fair, Danny. I also think there's a reality, and if you go back to the Worth example, because I think it's so analogous, like, they're in a position right now where they have to overpay to break any sort of tie, because they're on an island, they're young, and if you believe in them, up and coming, but that might not be really easily seen from the outside. So they're not going to beat the Red Sox on an equal offer for Alex Bregman. They're not going to beat the Blue Jays on an equal offer for Anthony Santander. It's a hard position to be in until they show the rest of the sport that, oh my, your good core is really, really good, and I want to be a part of that, kind of in the way the Commanders are. They're going to have to overpay to break all those ties.
Which makes sense. I don't need Alex Bregman. Christian Walker would be nice, right? I'd just like to walk before I could run. But it's a great piece, and really just getting to talk to Mark
Lerner, that's a big deal,
is an accomplishment. So well done. Barry Sforluga of The Post here on Grant and Danny. Thanks for the time. We really appreciate it.
Appreciate it, guys. Anytime.
Thanks, Barry.
Yeah, go check it out in The Post. It's a worthwhile story on the Nats and Lerner.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Speaking of which, NFL.com did a piece, bunch of veterans, and listed These are guys that you're not hearing a lot about, but could get cut and save their team a bunch of money. You know who they listed on that list? Was Marshawn Lattimore.
I was really surprised to see that name.
So I think if you're just putting together a list and if you've got some formula where you just look up veterans who make a lot of money that are coming off of bad seasons, x-axis is how much money you make, y-axis is how bad of a season that you had, and then you want people in the bottom right quadrant, so to speak, right? Marshawn Lattimore is going to be in that quadrant because he is due, against the cap this season, $18 million. And he was downright dreadful at times in the playoff run for Washington. We know they're probably not going to cut him because Adam Peters has come out and said as much, number one, because they just traded picks for him, and it would look really, really bad if he played as poorly as he did this past year. And then they cut him before the final 2 years of the contract that he has left. But they could get out of the deal with zero dead cap. This is your one chance to bail. You've got an opportunity. When you get in the car and start driving, you cannot get out again. It's like the roller coaster about to take off.
That's right.
You sat down, we're buckling up, and you're looking at your kid who's a little nervous, and you're going, hey, buddy, if you don't want to ride this thing, you got to make that decision right now. Because as soon as this thing leaves...
Yeah, when they lower those the bars.
We cannot come back. And so Washington has, right now, this moment to decide, am I paying Marshawn Lattimore $18 million or not? But this guy, and I don't know, I've never heard of him, but it's a writer, does some fantasy stuff at NFL.com, is just going through a bunch of the dudes that make a lot of money that didn't play well last year, and he's going, are we sure teams shouldn't cut this player? And he listed Marshawn Lattimore, who I think most of us have decided is coming back, and most of us think probably should come back based on what they gave up in the trade. But it is just another way to look at it. You know, it's like walking along, and now someone hands you binoculars, and you're like, oh, I kind of see what you're talking about. $18 million is not nothing for a guy that played poorly last season.
Yeah, and from the piece, and notably, he was talking about Lattimore. He was awful in the postseason, earning a horrific 29.6 coverage grade from PFF and allowing 10 catches for 172 yards and a 136.6 passer rating on 14 targets.
That doesn't even sound like all of the stuff that he allowed.
With a release, his entire $18 million cap hit would become savings in 2025. So when...
What a huge amount of cap space.
When you read that, you go... Actually, that makes a little sense. Now, I don't think it's on the table. I think Adam Peters believes in the
things, right?
Right.
Does it make sense and will they do it?
Precisely. And that's where I was going, is I don't think that's happening. I think he's here. I think they're saying we believe he's going to play better next year and we didn't trade for him just for the stretch run. That would have been nice, but we think we got something here and $18 million is going to be a bargain. If we sign someone like this in free agency, it would cost 25, 26 or so. So I don't think it's happening. Put that aside for a second. This is kind of reasonable. This makes sense to me. And I sort of didn't think about it this way, but now I'm kind of on the... I'm not agitating for it. I'm not sitting here telling you that I agree with this, but as someone who is not in the confident Marshawn Lattimore camp, I don't know. I don't know if this is not something that old Randy Duhier would have to consider.
I am ambivalent toward Lattimore a little bit because I just have so many conflicting feelings now on this, right? The first of which is... I actually thought when they acquired him that he was still an outstanding DB. And I have to assume that that is the case. I think he was hurt. And then when he came back a little too soon. And he wasn't 100%. And what I call chasing his tail, meaning, you know, he was kind of trying to get back up to speed at 100%. And it didn't work. And I think he is a lot better than he played. And he will be better this year. So I'm going to separate that. The other thing is, though, there is no guarantee of that. He had a bunch of hamstring problems in New Orleans. Then he came here and wasn't that much healthier and wasn't a quick healer. He's not getting younger. Danny, $18 million against the cap, you get every single penny of it. It doesn't matter who we're talking about. Yeah. If you're not a star and you're not kind of indebted to that player, I think it's got to be a consideration. Now, they don't really need $18 million. They already have the third most cap space. They're already not going to spend all the cap space they have. I'd love to sit here and tell you they're going to go out and get a corner and an edge and a tackle and a wide receiver and a running back, and they're going to have $2 million left in cap space. They're going to spend right up to the limit. Neither of us think that that's going to happen.
Right.
So the 18 is not really needed here. If they were at minus $3 million against the cap, well, now we could have a different conversation,
right?
And probably should have a different conversation where you need $18 million, and there's no guarantee he's going to deliver the goods, so you might need that $18 million. The last point here is what you gave up for the trade. it would look really bad. It would be a huge loss, and the first huge loss for Adam Peters, if you were to cut this player now, which they're not considering, I don't think, because to your point, I really do believe that they think he's going to be awesome next year and for the next 2 years, and they think that that's why they acquired him, and whatever they got, you know, after the injury this year was a bonus. But to that point, I do believe that Marshawn Lattimore at, you know, an $18 million rate would be viewed differently if they hadn't have just given up the multiple draft picks, which is not how you should operate. Sunk cost fallacy style here.
Yeah. Like,
because I gave up picks doesn't mean I've now got to keep them on my roster. I don't think that should be a consideration at this point. The only consideration should be, now that I've seen him in my building in my defense, what do I think he's going to be? What kind of guy is he in my locker room? And how good a player is he going to be next year?
And so some people would get really, really irritated if they, let's just say this comes true and they do cut him and save the money. I wouldn't. The attempt was very reasonable to me. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have a problem with you going, hey, we're better than we thought we'd be. Let's change course a little bit. We didn't give up a one or a two. We need some help right now. We got a guy for a couple of years that we think could really upgrade this position after we cut the previous idiot's first-round pick who played this position. We're awful at corner. We're trying to go do something special here. We can fix this right now. If a defensive end was available with a similar potential impact for the same cost, I probably would have done that. Same with a couple other spots. So I don't begrudge the attempt at all. When you're trying to build on the fly, a four-time or maybe it's five-time Pro Bowler is not usually available for you, with the team that's in salary cap hell like the Saints are. So I have no issue with the attempt. To me, like I'm with you in the sense that that's very like bad management, and that's like a very Bruce Allen thing to do to me. And I'm not calling Adam Peters that, but saying like we gave this up for him, we got to see it through. No, you don't. You got to build a really good team, and they know better than I do. They need to be able to say with confidence, the reason he did not play well was health and hamstring stuff. If that's the case, fine. I'm willing to give that an audience. To me, I am nervous about that guy.
Should they be thinking about $18 million as being as valuable as what Lattimore could give him next year? Should this even be a consideration where it seems like it's not? It seems like they made the decision when they made the trade that they're bringing him in for 3 years, whereas they have a get-out-of-jail-free card, and they can get $18 million without a single penalty for 1 cent this offseason. Is this something they should be thinking about with Lattimore, yes or no? All right, so I saw on the score yesterday they went through every single team in the AFC, and they were ranking the top three priorities for each team this offseason. They went through 16 AFC teams. I think the NFC is coming up next in their series. But I thought we could steal this and do it for the Commanders here. So you and I, we could go 1, 2, and 3. Let's rank these. These are the Commanders' biggest priorities this offseason as they get ready to embark on a new offseason. So you go first with number 3.
Offensive line is maybe too broad. I'll say tackle as a vehicle to upgrade the offensive line. Now, I don't know if that's a swap out Andrew Wiley for a new right tackle. I don't know if that's you help one of the guard spots by kicking Coleman inside to get new left tackle. I mean, to me, a new tackle solves a couple of those things as you start to kind of have the dominoes fall. But to me, that offensive line needs to be better. I don't want just okay. I want really, really good. And I think they could do that with a tweak or two.
My number 3 priority for the Commanders this offseason is to add a special, speedy weapon. I don't care what position that player plays. Ideally, running back or wide receiver, more so than tight end, because I think they've got a convoluted depth chart there anyway. But I'm every bit as okay, equal opportunity with it being an RB as a wide receiver. And I think I'm in the minority on that. But I just want speed. I want home run hitting ability. I want to add a power bat to this lineup, so to speak. I need someone who can hit the ball over the fence. If that's a wide receiver opposite McLaurin, great. If that's a running back who can, when he gets through the first line of defense, make somebody miss and go for 65 yards and a touchdown for the first time since I was 6, then let's do that. But I need a speedy, elite weapon added to this offense as my number 3 priority.
I realize I messed up. I went number 1 first, so I'm going in reverse order. I screwed this up. I didn't listen very well. That's on me. Offensive line's my number 1. My number 2...
So we're going to go...
Yeah, I'm doing 1, 2, 3. You do 3, 2, 1. Again, I messed this one up. If there's anyone to blame, it's going to be me. I screwed up. I'm sorry.
We're like a play.
Yeah.
Where the dress rehearsal doesn't matter.
Yep.
All of the...
I know.
Like, we prep for these things.
I know.
Man.
I know.
There's like meetings and
listen,
there's conversations before shows.
I know.
There's emails that get sent.
As soon as I went out with all, I'm like, That's my number one. And then you said number three. And listen, there's a newborn at home. I'm just telling you, I'm not sleeping that great.
All right,
so I'm a little foggy in the brain. That's my number one, was offensive line, specifically tackle.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Number two, wide receiver. I do care if it's a wide receiver running back. I need a wideout, not to beat Carolina, not to beat Cleveland, to compete with Philadelphia. I need a difference maker. I need a guy that can exploit man coverage. I need a guy that strikes fear in the heart of defenses. I don't know where that's coming from. I don't know if it's a third down war daddy, a T. Higgins type. I don't know if it's speed. I need something to take the pressure valve off of Terry McLaurin. I need somebody that is a threat. Doesn't mean you have to catch 100 balls. It does mean that defenses have to account for that player. I think that will make things easier, and that has to happen. The schedule gets tougher. The travel gets tougher. Everything gets tougher in year two as everybody's kind of honing in on you. I think they need a weapon to compete with the best teams.
So my number two biggest priority is the O-line. So we both have that on our list. I'm just putting fortify the offensive line there for me. You said you don't necessarily know how they do it, or is it that spot or this spot? And to that I say yes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
wrong answer for me. Yeah.
Here's what you have locked in my opinion. Right now, this moment, Tyler Biadasz at center. Because I would say Sam Cosmi at right guard, except he's coming off of a really serious knee injury and
late
may not
in
be
the season, yeah.
ready for week one. So if he's not ready for week one, then you could probably sign a starting right guard that you could eventually kick to left guard, and then Cosmi comes back 6-7 weeks into the season, and that's fine too. But at right tackle, you could absolutely add a new starter and cut Andrew Wiley. At right guard, you may not have Cosmi right away, so you could have a starter there early in the year that can play left guard or ultimately maybe slide out to tackle. At left guard, I like Nick Allegretti a lot. He'll be in the organization. I think he serves a nice purpose as a former Super Bowl winner with the Chiefs and one of the key cogs in the brotherhood. But Nick Allegretti at left guard does not need to be a starter. In fact, I'm not sure that he should start this coming year. You could probably do better there. And then left tackle, where I would put Brandon Coleman in pencil, maybe even pen. I'm not using Sharpie yet. If the right guy pops up and you want to play a left tackle that you just signed in free agency or acquired via trade, and now that means Coleman goes to the right side or plays guard, I'm okay with that too.
Yep.
I want to add at least two new starters to that offensive line. And if it's three, great.
Yeah, Coleman for me, I didn't mean to cut you off, Coleman for me is part of my solution. He's not an issue. He's not someone I want to replace.
He will be one of the five starters.
Exactly. I could keep him at left tackle. I could move him to left guard. I could move him to right tackle, potentially. I mean, they have to do that evaluation.
Yeah, and just so people know, because they're like, well, you guys are just acting like he can play any position. He played more guard than tackle in college.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of teams thought when he got drafted, he was more of a guard. Now, Washington, to their credit, thought he could play tackle. And he was admirably decent at left tackle as a third-round pick, kind of getting thrown into the deep end. So there's a lot of reason to believe, fast forward a year or two, he could be a franchise left tackle. I mean, he showed enough that makes you think if he grows. There's also some question there as to, like, what is the ceiling, and maybe you move him elsewhere.
Precisely. So, he is one of my starters, where I think is up to them. If a right tackle shakes out, then you don't have to worry about it. If a left tackle shakes out, hey, we've already got someone. But he's not a... I have to put him at left tackle in Sharpie because I've got Trent Williams or something like that. So I think we're eye-to-eye there. My number three priority is a defensive end. I want a really solid to plus defensive end. A Hendrickson, a Garrett, a world leader would be incredible, but a massive upgrade there. With all due respect to the Cleveland Farrells, the Dorrance Armstrongs, nothing wrong with those guys, but I need more right. We're now past the, ain't nothing wrong with that, to I need a dude. So I'm on dude patrol to find me one of those guys that can really get after the quarterback, that can set the edge, that can free up things on running downs for the linebackers and guys kind of walking down to the box, and can also wreak some havoc.
So what's funny about us doing the exercise in reverse order of one another is that we actually have our lists in reverse order.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I think the number one priority for them is that defender that you just mentioned as your number three. A defender who can be Dan Quinn's chess piece, like a pass rushing presence edge who is a game defining player. I need someone on that defense that scares an offensive coordinator. I think Frankie Louvu's excellent at the second level at linebacker. Nice to have that. They don't really have that player in their secondary. I think they got a couple of decent players. Quan Martin's coming into his own. Very good. If they bring Jeremy Chinn back, I'm excited about that. They need Marshawn Lattimore to make a leap, but at times in his career, he's been outstanding at corner. Mikey Sandra's still in the nickel, could eventually be a really, really good player, had a solid to plus rookie season. But on the first level of defense, when we're talking pass rushing and who you've got to account for and lining up and pointing out where's 95, where's 97, whatever the guy's going to wear, they don't have that defender. they need someone, with all apologies to my guy Dante Fowler, who had 10.5 sacks, which is a good number this past year, who could go get you 12 to 15 sacks and also wreak havoc. Like, not just get some sacks, but be great in the running game, set the edge, TFLs, pressures. That's not Dante Fowler. Fowler scooped up sacks, which was a cool thing. That was good. It was a great signing for a few million bucks.
Yep.
It was a huge win. They need an A-plus where Fowler's like a B-minus in that role. And I would pay a lot of money or picks for it.
Yeah, that's a premium spot. I mean, again, this is my distinction that I'm offering now. It's not very scientific, but there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with Dante Fowler. I'm very pro. That was awesome. What a great signing. Again, he wasn't even really a frontline guy for them. They gave him less money than Tress Way, and he had 10.5 sacks. They prioritized other guys even over him. It was one of those, he knows Dan Quinn and maybe he could fit in the system. He had an unbelievable season, and that was awesome. He's now going to need a monster pay raise. I'm not sure if I want to give that, right? Again, nothing wrong with Dante Fowler. But this is one of those premium spots where you not only have to do better, you have to do really, really, really well. And this is a big vacancy. It's funny to think that that's all they had a handful of years ago was 4 first-round picks on that defensive line. That's how quickly the league changes, man.
I also think we have a tendency here. We lionize John Allen a little bit. We lionize Daron Payne some. One or both of those guys can come back, and that's fine. They didn't get the type of production I'm talking about out of either of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those are good football players. I'm talking about a great player.
Right.
Miles Garrett's name coming up has opened my eyes to this. It's almost like you see this in movies sometimes where, like, the single person goes on a date and they get, like, reinvigorated to fall in love again or something. Or you know, someone is a widow or whatever, and they go years and years, and their friends are trying to get them back out there, and they finally, like, meet some guy, and now all of a sudden they're just, like, 25 years old again. The rumors to Miles Garrett make me want a defensive end who can go get 15 sacks more than I've ever wanted one before, because it feels like you're closer to that than you've been in a long time.
Did you remember the report a couple years ago when Chris Sale might have been up for, bad pun, but Sale? And we're sort of like, yeah, I don't need Chris Sale. And then the idea that they might get Chris Sale, it's all I can think about. I never stopped thinking about that. Like, wouldn't it be amazing if he came in? Now that this Miles Garrett thing has been dangling in front of me, I'm 100% with you. Like, you know what we really need more than anything is that world-leading defensive end.
And you keep seeing everyone ranking them the most mm-hmm. best destination, the most likely team to do it, the team that should do it. And you're going, yeah, they're right.
Yeah.
We should do that. All right, so we have the same three categories, by the way. A edge defender, number one for me, number three for Danny. Fortifying the offensive line, I think, is number two for me.
One for me.
And then a speedy weapon. I've got third, you've got second.
Wide receiver for me is number two.
Yeah. So, all right, let's go around the horn here before we open up the phones. 800-636-1067. Toby, we'll start with you. Your biggest priority for the Commanders this offseason.
Yeah, I would agree with you guys. I don't necessarily it needs to be an edge rusher, but some sort of pass rushing threat. You saw the impact of the Super Bowl. So someone on that D-line that's going to make a big impact, even if it's from the interior, through the draft, whatever. Someone that's going to make a big impact there. I want to see improvement on the offensive line. And I'm going to go with running back. I want to see an explosive threat, because I think you saw that you can kind of get by with Jaden with subpar secondary options. I do want to improve there, but I think you can get by with secondary options that aren't maybe as good as some of the top guys, but I need someone that's a home run threat to open up that run game.
Is that your order, 1, 2, and 3 in that order?
Yes.
All right, Toby and I have the same exact order. Ryan, your biggest priority this offseason?
My top three priorities are anything on the defensive line. I think that in today's game, with all the great quarterbacks, pressure is so important, and we saw what the Eagles did in the Super Bowl, just suffocating Patrick Mahomes all 4 quarters long. So I think defensive line, anywhere on that position front, you can probably improve, because at this point, you're not looking all too great. I'm also looking at wide receiver. Help Jaden Daniels as much as you can. Get someone like a T. Higgins in the building. Trade for a Cooper Kupp, or do whatever you can to get anyone else in this building. And number three, I'm going to zag a little bit. You need a kicker. Kicker is a huge issue for the Commanders at this
Clary
point in time.
Going kicker on
like,
us.
We need a kicker. I'm tired of this carousel that we've had the last few seasons. Get someone in here that can hit at a 90% clip, and I'll be happy.
Brandon McManus could be available. So he's the only one so far to leave O-line off of his list. Mm. Darius, number one priority for the Commanders.
Number one priority is also going to be defensive line for me. I need a pass rusher that's going to make life hell for opposing quarterbacks. As we saw in the Super Bowl, how the Eagles dominated Patrick Mahomes, I want to see our team be able to do that as well. So pass rusher is number one for me. Number two for me is explosive offensive weapon. I'm going to lean more so running back than wide receiver. Just because
I get Sice for the running back love in this studio right now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I just think
Danny's so Rick.
I just think we saw this year that the lack of explosiveness from the running back position.
Totally.
When you have an explosive quarterback, I just think it would have been a match made in heaven if he had somebody that matches his speed or his explosiveness out of the backfield.
Look what Saquon did for Hurts.
Absolutely.
And look at what Henry did for Jackson.
Unbelievable.
And vice versa, by the way.
Yeah.
Like just a couple 2,000-yard backs. You go O-line in there third?
No. Third, I'm gonna go with a playmaking defensive back. Whether that's at the cornerback position or safety position, I need somebody who's going to get turnovers. It's something that this team has lacked for years and years. We don't have anybody that gets multiple interceptions or more than two or three interceptions in a season. We need somebody who's going to up that number for us.
So I wanted really badly to put corner and DB on the list. It's also receiving votes for me. But O-line, weapon, and obviously my number one edge defender, we're just above it.
Sure.
But we're all kind of feeding out of a similar vein.
Yeah, you look at the roster, you see the same thing. It's just weird that Darius and Ryan both want Daniels to get hurt or something. It seems like they don't care about the quarterback at all.
That's tough. Because on the Rude Guest Hotline, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV, Rude, we've got our guy Matt Harmon, who I mentioned has been talking wide receivers and all things NFL. And I had a take I wanted to discuss with him about Deebo Samuel. Matt, it's good to have you back on Grant and Danny. How you been?
Always good to be here, boys. Appreciate you having me. Yeah, things are good. You'd think it'd be the downtime in terms of NFL content creation. No, completely the opposite. You go from Super Bowl, 2 weeks later, it's all draft, it's all combine, trying to figure this thing out. And you also have free agency looming over us as well. So I've never been better to be alive, that is for sure.
There's a lot of ground to cover with you. For those of you that remember Matt being on the show over the years talking wide receivers, created reception perception. He's writing and analyzing the ball at Yahoo now. But I want to start with Deebo Samuel because I saw a conversation you guys were having, and it seems like you like the idea of him to Washington. Can you expound upon that?
Sure. So, I mean, number one, starting just kind of big picture, I think this is it's an interesting offseason for Washington because obviously the team exceeded expectations by leaps and bounds. You're making it to the conference championship game. But you come into this offseason and there is a lot of needs on this team because there are so many veteran free agent rentals that they hit it out of the park with last year that they need to kind of now decide like, okay, the Zach Ertz signing worked out really well. Is he a part of our future? Are we bringing him back? You know, Bobby Wagner on the defense. You can go down the list for all these kind of guys that they brought in on 1 year or short-term deals and kind of deciding, like, how much of this era of 1 year are we keeping around? But hanging over all of that is the fact that they have an abundance of cap space and I think a real need to make this offense as dynamic as possible. It already felt incredibly dynamic because Jaden Daniels is that guy. And also Cliff Kingsbury, I think, was excellent as the play caller and offensive designer. I mean, him just being focused on ball plays and not everything, all the BS that comes with being a head coach, I think was a great fit for him. So you already have this very dynamic offense. How can we make it better? I think you make it better by essentially bringing in just more pass-catching juice. To me, that's like priority, not priority number one for Washington, but it's certainly up there. It's a draft where there might be some guys like maybe 3-4 first round picks, but it's not necessarily the strongest wide receiver draft. There's going to be a lot of these kind of veteran free agents available who maybe are past their best days, and I think Deebo Samuel would be among those. However, I do think what makes him interesting for this team, and I think there are receivers I'd probably like better for Washington than Deebo, but why I think he just makes sense as a player that could land there. And as a guy that's difficult to project where his next team will be because he's so hyper-specific, there's a connection in the front office with Adam Peters, the Commanders GM. He spent time in San Francisco. That always just kind of helps things get done. I mean, it is a relationship business. If there's some familiarity there between Deebo and Peters, just him being familiar with the front office, that can help get a deal done. Secondly, again, there is a big need there at wide receiver. Deebo's not really a traditional wide receiver, but he's somebody that could be deployed well on some of these layup concepts that Cliff likes to have in the offense, you know, quick hitters, screens. There was always the joke about he ran the horizontal raid in Arizona. Obviously, Deebo on those quicker routes, that's where he's best. And secondly, you know, they've got a lot of cap room. Like, even if Debo is overpaid and you probably have to take on a contract you don't necessarily want, they're one of these teams that has more cap space than they could possibly spend. So that's why just kind of connecting the dots. Again, there are receivers I might like better, types of receivers I might like better, but I think that's a spot that might make sense for a guy like Debo Samuel.
So, Matt, I'm a Debo Samuel guy. I've always been enamored from afar, but then you look at, you know, his games played is deceptive because he'll have that game where he like gets one target and then sits down or, you know, or whatever. So it seems like he's always banged up. And here's my very poorly drawn analogy. Let's say I love sports cars and I get a sports car and then my job changes and I'm just like commuter Craig. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just taking it to and from work and up and down the cul-de-sac, dropping my kids off at school. I can't drive 195 anymore. Right? Like, is that a consideration for Debo Samuel? In other words, if you've got him, the temptation is to use him like Debo Samuel. That means five carries a game. I'm throwing this close to the line of scrimmage or doing this, that, and the other with him. Maybe is there a way to keep him healthier and you don't get the full experience, but you still have a nice sports car?
Right, and I think that that's probably the way to look at this, because I'm not here to say that Debo is still the prime player that he once was. I don't think that's the case. I think it's pretty clear that he has taken a step back physically from an explosiveness standpoint. We also should, at least to be fair to Debo, mention that he had pneumonia last year. Like, that could also be a part of why he certainly did have that down season overall. There was some just kind of general discontent around the Niners. I mean, this guy was about to fight the kicker and the long snapper at one point during the year. You can't tell me that, like, everything's good in the building when one of your best offensive players is trying to fight the kicker and the long snapper. That's not necessarily a great sign there. But just kind of general discontent there, maybe that's part of it. But I do think that the amount of hits this guy's taken has added up. You know, he was pretty adamant at one point when he was negotiating this contract that he's currently on that he didn't want to sit here and take a bunch of hits like running backs do, because that's where your body starts to wear down over the seasons. And I think you have seen that with Debo, that he has started to still continue to do that running back work, and he's taken a lot of hits as a wide receiver too. So that punishment has definitely, I think, taken a toll on the body. But to your point about the sports car, yeah, I mean, look, you can still use him and sprinkle him in into certain packages and concepts. And that's why I like this idea with Washington too, because he doesn't have to come in here and you got to build the whole offense out of Debo Samuel like the Niners have done, maybe to a fault at times, I think. You've got a number one wide receiver in Terry McLaurin, and their roles could not be more different, right? Like, McLaurin is a perimeter receiver. You can line him up at X every single snap and never have to think twice about it. You're not going to do that. You're going to move him around a little bit, and they were better as the year went on doing that. But that's not Debo at all. He's a guy that's going to be detached from the line of scrimmage. He's going to move around between the slot and flanker position. So, again, he's not a guy that you got to come in here and say, we got to get 10 touches to Debo Samuel. I'm thinking more like 5 to 6. And that could add just another option in the offense.
Matt Harmon is with us from Yahoo on Grant and Danny. In a world where Debo, let's say, gets cut, and so you're working on a new contract with him, and the same happens for Cooper Kupp, there's no takers for either of those guys. Who are you more interested in? And then also, if you could piggyback that with some thoughts on if Kupp's got anything left.
Yeah, I think between the two, just all things being equal, like you said, no trade, no contract, new deal, I think I'd probably rather have Cooper Kupp, especially for this team, because, like, I know this is not what gets what puts butts in seats or anything like that. We're talking about wide receivers, but this is a run-heavy offense, and I think it's going to remain that way. It should remain that way, even if JT Daniels is an incredible quarterback. Like, Cliff's run games have been very, very good over the years, and I think from a design perspective, they did some good things. Kind of fell off towards the back half of the year, so that is on my radar. But a guy who could line up in the slot and really do some almost tight end things at the wide receiver position from a blocking standpoint, I think Kupp brings a lot there. And he also just brings that kind of veteran safety valve as well. So really, especially if you're not going to bring back Zach Ertz, which, I mean, if I'm the Commanders, I'm probably interested in bringing back Ertz. And if I'm Ertz, he had a very telling quote after the NFC Championship loss, where he said, like, I just wish, and this, like, hit me when I read it, you know, I just wish I had more time in my career. I wish I was playing with this guy and this team in this locker room in my 20s, not deep into my 30s. I probably think he's back there, but if not, I think Kupp can bring you that sort of safety valve-type player. And, again, they just have an abundance of resources, so I do think, like, even if you overlap between Ertz and Kupp, he's probably the guy I would pick there.
Matt Harmon with us here, invented Reception Perception for years. I have been reading his stuff and passing it off like I thought of it myself here on the radio. Always a pleasure to have him come on. So,
You mentioned earlier, Matt, that there are a couple other receivers you preferred. Maybe Kupp is one of them who you just went into. Are there other guys you say, hey, this might actually be a great fit? Doesn't have to be instead of Debo, but could also include that. Give me some other guys you think would be good fits that Washington might be able to target.
Yeah, number one player, and I have been talking on my show about this potential fit and while also acknowledging that it's probably not going to happen. So let me get people excited here and then probably just mention that I don't actually think this is going to happen. But to me, this has made sense for a long time now. Chris Godwin to the Commanders, I think would just be a perfect fit for a variety of reasons. Number one, I mentioned that blocking that is going to be critical for these wide receivers. Godwin's probably, if not the best blocking receiver in the league, he's definitely in the top five, top three conversation. Such a smart veteran player who is always in the right spots. He took on a lot of responsibilities as that power slot player for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offense last year, not just what he did from a production standpoint, which, by the way, was one of the most productive receivers in the league before he got hurt in week seven. He was also key in getting guys lined up in the right spots, and that's an offense in Tampa Bay under Liam Cohen, now Jacksonville Jaguars head coach, where they put a lot on the receivers in terms of motions and splits and pre-snap alignments, and Godwin was really the current offensive coordinator, who was the pass game coordinator last year, talked about it as being that coach on the field, basically, getting players lined up. I think a smart player like that, who is, when healthy, still super explosive and brings you like an addition in the run and pass phase, he would be a perfect fit for this Washington Commanders offense. Now, the problem is here, I don't know if he gets out of Tampa Bay. Right now, if I had to predict it, I actually predict that he's back in Tampa Bay. But even if he gets to the open market, this is a guy that I would think, like, even though he's coming off of an injury, which, you know, I don't want to sit here and yada yada the injury, but he is definitely a player that I would sink multiple years into, like commit a big contract to, as opposed to these guys like Debo or Kupp, who might be one-year rentals, because unlike those guys, he was having one of the best seasons of his career before he got hurt last year.
Matt, it sounded like when you talked about the draft, just for that moment that you did, maybe we're going to come back down to earth a little bit after a couple of years of a heater at the wide receiver position.
Yeah, and I mean, listen, it's hard not to be spoiled with the wide receiver position that we've had really the last five seasons. Since 2020, we've kind of been on a heater in terms of wide receiver classes. But to me, and look, I'm very early into my prep on these guys. I've just kind of started taking a look. I've got about three games charted, usually reception, perception. The full sample is eight games, which those will be up on the site as we get into March and then into April and obviously draft time. Right now, I'm still kind of early prep on these players. And it looks like more of a class like the 2023 class, where we had, you know, four guys go in the first round. We had JSN, we have Zay Flowers, we have Jordan Addison, we have Quentin Johnston. Those guys have been varying degrees of success in the NFL. I think it looks like a class like that. There are definitely players that I think if they get to that back half of the first round that I think Washington could be looking at. I'll talk about Luther Burden here is a player that I think can beat man coverage, which is super exciting for a team like Washington that, you know, you already have a ton of answers when it comes from man coverage, right? Like, you've got a man coverage beater in Terry McLaurin. You've got a quarterback who, if he doesn't like what he sees downfield against man coverage, he can scramble. This is another guy who can beat man, but even more importantly, he's also a player that maybe he's not the same yak threat that Debo was in his prime, but he's somebody that if you get him the ball in space, he can make plays. And that is also going to be key when we look about this Washington offense with just getting guys into space, what Cliff Kingsbury likes to do. So there'll be options there, but I definitely think it looks like more of a 2023 class as opposed to what we've gotten last year or even the year before that.
When you say three receivers-ish in the first round, is that McMillan, Arizona, Burden from Missouri, and Egbuka from Ohio State? Or like who are those?
Those are the three I think I will probably have as, to me, at least tier two or three prospects, which in my rankings on the site, a tier two prospect, tier one is a top 10, like, ready-made superstar. You know, think about, like, Malik Nabers and those guys last year. Those were all tier one prospects to me. Back in the 2022 class, Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, Drake London, those guys were all tier ones. I didn't think anybody from that 23 class, as much as I like JSN, was a tier one player. And I'm not sure, McMillan maybe. McMillan and Burden are the two I've liked the most so far, but those guys would be maybe candidates. But right now, I'd probably bet they're more so just the way the charting data looks so far. And again, it's still pretty early. I think these guys are maybe tier two to tier three players. Tier three players are fringe round one, like late round one, early round two, the guys that, you know, Jordan Addison was in that bucket. Zay Flowers in that bucket. These are still really, really good prospects. And I think that guys like Igbuka could be in that group. To me, I'm curious if anybody else kind of jumps into that. If I had to bet, I would say we'd probably end up seeing four, even if I don't think there are four round one receivers. The reality is that this is a premium position, you know, and we're talking about some of these names on the free agent market. I'm having to give you a lot of caveats, right? Like, okay, if Chris Goddard is healthy, if this guy is, you know, can recapture his form from a couple of years ago, I think teams will still look at that. If they don't get one of these veterans that they like, they'll look at the draft and say, hey, yeah, maybe this is a round two player, but there's not a lot of first round grades in this class anyways. Let's take the stab here, you know, late in the 20s.
Matt, I want to go back to the other end of the spectrum with some veterans. We talked about this with Washington a bit. There was kind of a soft market for some of these guys, you know, in their 30s on some of these short-term deals where they got great value out of Fowler, Wagner, Ertz, and company. Three pretty big-name receivers, all north of 30, with I'm sure their best days behind them. I want your evals super quick here. Amari Cooper, Keenan Allen, and Stephon Diggs. Might they be a bargain for somebody? And I'm putting bargain in quotation marks, obviously.
Sure, yeah, and obviously Cooper is tough, man, because I loved that trade at time that Buffalo made. You know, I was like, that's exactly what they need, perimeter guy that can separate, right? Because they had kind of two, I'd say it was like twin towers receivers, right? Keon Coleman, Matt Collins, who really are not separators. I thought Cooper was a great addition there. Just didn't work out from a health perspective. He was kind of in and out of the offense generally, was never really like a true focal point. That concerns me, right? That dip in production, that dip in playing time, and I think dip in the play on film too, is a problem. He's probably somebody who deserves, you know, to get a roster spot this year, but I wouldn't be counting on him as anything more than maybe like a number three at this point. With Keenan Allen, Keenan Allen's been in kind of like a steady decline, and this is why. So this offseason is going to give me fits because. The number one thing I say about wide receiver play, the hardest thing to predict is the age cliff. Like sometimes you see it. I'll go back to Dez Bryant with the Cowboys. Like I was saying in his final season in Dallas, like, oh no, this guy has gone off a cliff. Right. And like, he really never recaptured any sort of form. He waited till like November to sign with the Saints immediately towards Achilles. And sometimes it's like that. Other times it is kind of like a steady decline. And I think Keenan Allen's been kind of on that steady decline for the last few years, but he's still a useful, productive player. He's not a blocker. He's a slot only guy. I think he makes sense for really specific teams, and it's kind of difficult to identify exactly which team that is. Diggs, I think, is another guy who's, you know, he didn't have his best season his final year in Buffalo. I thought he was playing pretty well as the Texans slot receiver, but I think he's more of a guy you want on the outside because, yet again, not a blocker, but still somebody who can get open and beat man coverage. But once again, let's talk about the big if word here. He's coming off an injury. He's coming off a torn ACL, now into his 30s. So he's another if candidate. So, yeah, I think all those guys, varying degrees of interest. Diggs probably, I think, has the highest ceiling left remaining, but is also coming off an injury, which is a big question.
Stunning and just a fascinating market. I think it's going to be really compelling because of all the injuries, the age, and some of the star power, the big names that are going to be available on the wide receiver market. Matt Harmon, check his workout at Yahoo. And of course, he's on social as well at @MattHarmon_BYB. Thank you, buddy. We appreciate you.
Thanks, Matt.
Appreciate you guys. Yeah, super interesting team to talk about this year. Very much enjoying watching them. Thank you guys again for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure, man. It's awesome to chat with you. There's Matt Harmon on Grant and Danny. But I got home and I got dinner and I put my feet up. And I watched the Four Nations final.
Yeah.
And boy, did it deliver the goods.
Mm.
I know. You're upset. The United States of America didn't win. I don't think that's the lead here, I'll be honest with you. What an unbelievable hockey game that everybody's been talking about today. How often does the hype end up being met with a great matchup? That was really, really good, fast, high-end, top-of-the-line talent hockey. Great night for the sport. We got an overtime game out of it. The United States was going shot for shot, stride for stride with Canada. That's a win, I think, for everybody involved. Now, unfortunately, Connor McDavid scored the game-winning goal and Canada beat the United States. But I got to be honest, Danny, I still, even though I was watching that game like a Capitals fan playing the Penguins in a game seven with anxiety every time Canada had the puck in overtime, and I couldn't believe I cared that much about this thing that does not matter at all. I mean, really, just doesn't. Who wins? Who doesn't? Like, the trophy? Come on. But I was so in, and it was so fun.
So you asked, how often does the expectations meet the hype? Probably as often as too many men on the ice is not called against Canada, is what I would say, in terms of how frequently. And no, I'm not bitter about it. Wait, yes, I am. I'm furious. I'm livid. I have so much hate in my heart. I'm so pissed off, so irritated, so mad. I don't really have much else to say other than that. Like, this, obviously, the thing is a success. It got me to care about something I didn't care about 10 days ago. So it's a win. The NHL's won, or hockey's won. Whoever's responsible, take a bow. You've done really well. I can't stop being pissed off. Every time I think about it, I'm in a worse mood than I was before. It basically somehow matched my pre-Capital Stanley Cup win. Gut punch, anxiety, frustration, anger, sitting there miserable, stewing and miserable every second watching this game. That, like, that level of give a damn is very rare. Like, before the Caps won the Stanley Cup, like, it was like, it's never going to happen, it's never going to happen. Just sitting there just miserable watching it. Now that they've won, it released the pressure valve, and it's like, yeah, okay, I'm bummed they lose, but it doesn't hurt as bad. But it hurt bad. This was the first time since the Caps won the Stanley Cup that I have felt the way that I felt last night.
So I understand the frustration with the loss and the heartbreak when that goal is scored, because everybody was invested in and really buying in and excited about the game. I have a hard time, though, with that being the lead for you. In other words, like, your main takeaway from last night is your anger that America lost.
Yes.
Not how awesome this tournament or that game was. That one I struggle with.
Well, it's an emotional thing. Like, I can spin two plates. Plate one is what I just said, but plate two, yeah, it's a success. I didn't care 10 days ago. I cared desperately enough to feel
That's
the emotions
why
I'm feeling.
I'm fascinated by you feeling like it's like a personal affront that you were angry and you personally
That's
lost
right.
last
This
night.
Is me and my fandom. Right. Yeah, I am so angry. But again, the fact that I was moved to an emotion, to that level of emotion for the first time since the Caps won the Stanley Cup by hockey, on something I didn't really understand or care about less than 2 weeks ago, is a massive win for whoever's involved. Let me take a bow. Gary Bettman, you know, hold up your own personal parade. Whoever was responsible for it, kudos, you did it. But I'm telling you how invested I was last night.
Well, that's actually going to end up being our poll of the day here. You can go vote on the 106.7 The Fan Twitter account. It's our Grant and Danny poll of the day presented by Metropolitan Moving and Storage, local, long distance, residential, or commercial. 3 decades of best-in-class service and experience. Will the success of this Four Nations tournament and the championship game that everybody watched last night that was so good, will that lead to added interest and added television numbers and ratings for the NHL the rest of the year? I was talking to Drabby about this today. Mm-hmm. I don't think that it's certainly not a one-to-one. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
When you get your taxes back, it's not like every dollar that you ever spent, you know, it ends up coming back.
Good, yeah, you know I see what you're saying. I do, yeah.
I don't anticipate that everyone who watched, who's not a big hockey fan, and that everyone, and I saw them all over my timeline, a lot of the NFL people and NBA people that I follow were admitting, hey, I'm not really a hockey fan, but this is awesome. Hey, I haven't watched a hockey game in 2 years, 4 years, 6 years. This is incredible. Is this what every NHL game's like? And the answer to that, sadly, is no. This is pretty damn good. Mm-hmm. The speed of the game, the talent on the ice, it's just better than what you're typically going to get in a regular season game. But I say all this, Danny, to just ask the question, is there going to be some carryover? I think there will be.
There's going to be some.
Drabby and I don't know if we disagreed on it a little bit or what, but he's like, I just don't know how much progress it makes for hockey. My point is this. I don't watch women's basketball. I don't have a problem with it, right? I just am not that interested. It's never really appealed or been something that has crossed my radar. There's only so many hours in the day. I'm obsessed with a lot of other things, mm-hmm. and I can't really add one without taking one away. When the Caitlin Clark rise to fame took place at Iowa and everybody was talking about it in our kitchen and in every studio and we're talking about it on air, obviously I started watching some of those games in the Final Four to go, she can't really be that good. They're saying female Steph Curry, let me see here. You know what I did? I ended up watching her once or twice in a WNBA game. Did I watch every WNBA game? Of course not. Did I watch games when she wasn't playing? No, but that's still a huge win. Like, there was carryover by way of attendance and ratings for people that got in because of her and then cared a little bit more because of her, and I still think that's a win. And I think something like that could happen for this tournament.
That's a perfect analogy. So let's say, for the sake of argument, that buzz and that interest is a 10 out of 10 when Caitlin Clark, the phenomenon, was happening and whatever, right? If you give a 1 out of 10 in terms of casual interest, you're not sitting there breaking down Breonna Stewart's game or telling people how great Asia Wilson is, and that's not your prerogative, and it's not mine either, just by the way, as it happens to be. But 1 is more than 0. And I know that sounds dismissive, but that's the point. If you get a 10% bump, whatever that looks like, whatever, however you want to quantify that, 15%, 12%, 8%, yeah, it's a win. At a minimum, it's a great thing that we all enjoyed, and that's that. But at a maximum, if this is really done well, like if I'm the NHL, I've got to figure out a way to go see the guys you just saw in this tournament in a city near you or on television at these times. Like if you would like to say, like, I didn't know that much about Brady Tkachuk. I remember Tkachuk's dad, or which, you know, the Cole Tkachuk family from when I was a kid, in NHL 94, but I now care about Brady Tkachuk. I didn't before, I do now. That head-button, goal-scoring, chucking and jiving Iron Bull. So I'm interested in that guy. So if I'm the NHL, from whatever team he plays for, I need to market that. Do I trust them to do that? No, but it's because it's not a one-to-one. This is one of those, you've got momentum. You've got eyeballs that are here now that weren't there 2 weeks ago. What can you do to say, come see the American players that were in this thing and gave you so much here?
Like, well, let me ask you,
here's your vehicle.
Connor McDavid's going to be at Capital One Arena on Sunday. He is the best player on the planet. He scored the game-winning goal for Canada. Is there somebody in this city who watched the United States and Canada play two awesome games in a week or any part of this tournament or the final, and maybe they weren't a big hockey fan, who might go to the Caps in the Edmonton game on Sunday afternoon?
Yeah.
I think so, too.
Yeah, there might be.
And I think that's the whole point. I just thought the passion on display was unbelievable.
Yep.
The buy-in, the give-a-damn from these players. I tweeted
out a
video of Brady Tkachuk's goal after he scored last night when he was primal screaming. It was exactly the Michael Phelps on the outside of the pool, like, You tuck your elbows into your ribs and you're like, your chin is now opposite your chest up toward the sky and you're screaming as loud as you can. Like, you know, the Michael Phelps image.
Oh, yeah.
He's doing that after his goal last night. He claims it's the biggest game he's ever played in, and he's never played in the playoffs, so it actually kind of makes sense. I thought this was interesting from PK Subban talking about the culture of hockey and why something like this is possible on the ice with these players and the pride they take. Rather than maybe in other sports and juxtaposing it to basketball, which has an issue with its fans at this point when you've got so many players taking healthy days off and seemingly a passion problem.
Well, listen, hockey's a different sport from the NBA. You can't compare the cultures because of the way the game is played. You can step on an NBA floor and go through the emotions. You can't do that in hockey. You can't. Like, the culture of our sport, you have to play it with passion. You have to be willing to fight. You have to be willing to leave it on the ice. That's what fans are investing in. So for us, when we charge $1,500 for a ticket to come to Fortnite, fans know what they're getting. Cale Makar, the best defenseman in the world, wasn't in the lineup for this game. This was the most viewed game that we've had in years. And you see it, it's because it's not just based on the skill and talent. It's based on the pride.
PK Subban on ESPN went on to talk about playing through injury, playing through pain. Mm-hmm. They do it in hockey more than they do in other sports. Matthew Tkachuk's trying to talk his way back on the ice last night. And the only reason he wasn't able to is because his own team doctor from Florida was the doctor on the bench saying, dude, we're not letting you play
again.
Yeah,
you can't move. I mean, it's obvious.
By the way, if he would have finished the game, I do think we would have won. But I won't go that route.
No
sour grapes here, okay? But that was a bummer that he got hurt. But there's just something too. I don't know what it is about hockey, but when you put the countries on the sweaters, mm-hmm. these guys just care so much.
And in fairness to other sports, but I don't disagree with a lot of what Subban was talking about with basketball, but you get the same ramp up in terms of basketball too. It's a different game than hockey, but, like, you know, there's some passion when guys are wearing that jersey, but I do think it's a smart point. I mean, the biggest obstacle I think hockey had in the U.S. was it was an adopted game. Kind of the same way soccer is, right? Kids don't, in so many huge parts of the country, do not grow up playing hockey. Whereas you see football, baseball, basketball, tennis, whatever. You go, I understand that. I did it to some degree. There's a familiarity with it. And now that it's more ubiquitous, there's more play. I mean, look at this area, for God's sakes. It used to be, if you wanted to skate, you went to Fort DuPont. Or you had to wait for Georgetown to freeze in the winter, and you could go by the fountain where the Caps got hammered. Now there's like places to play. That's different than it used to be.
By the way, Matthew Tkachuk, who I mentioned, was playing through pain and through injury in this tournament. Played in the Stanley Cup final last year with a broken sternum.
That's a big one, by the way, the sternum. It's right in the middle.
Just a broken sternum.
How's your sternum? It's broken, but I'm going to give it a go.
Checking people, throwing his weight around.